Blog Talk Radio.
Hey, it's Dave here. Hold on one second. I've got to go dial in Jay. So I will be right back. Don't go away. Hold on. Good thing I checked, because we weren't.
All right.
But now we are. We are recording for everybody else who is listening in. So how you doing?
I'm doing good. Welcome to Rebooting the News number 8.
That's right. It is. We're going to do some rebooting in the news today?
Yeah.
We've
got a busy agenda.
I think we do.
We have the suggested users list to talk about. We have celebrity and Twitter. We have sources of inspiration and maybe one or two other things.
Correct. So you want to start off with the suggested user list?
Yeah. Why don't you ask me questions, and we'll try to explain it for our listeners.
Sure. Well, as you know, I have been trying to talk with you about the suggested user list since it started. And I think the first question that I have, just to go back over, you know, because you are a journalism professor, and I think this is an issue that is about journalism, and it's exactly the kind of thing I think a professor would be interested in. So the question, first question I'd like to ask, and, you know, obviously if there's any questions I ask you don't want to answer, it's cool, right?
Okay.
Because I'm not going to, like, grill you. This isn't Meet the Press. I'm not going to ask you the same question 15 times.
Well, let's pull our chairs closer to the fire and see what we can see.
Thank you very much. Okay, so why is it that you didn't want to discuss it the first time when it came up? Because he didn't.
This isn't my perception of what I said, and I said I didn't have as much passion about it as you did.
Got it.
I was willing to let it sort of go for a while, but part of that was that you were worrying about it, so I could worry about other things.
Got it. Well, would you say that your attitude has changed in any way, or what happened this week? Tell us what happened.
Well, let me tell you the story, and then we can talk about my decision-making. But actually, it started with something that was good. It was nice. It was the sort of thing a writer gets off on. New York Magazine put out this little chart, which was amusing, about our approval matrix for who to follow on Twitter. And it was graphed in two dimensions, and one was from sort of private to public, meaning personal tweets versus more sort of sharing news. On one axis, the horizontal axis. And on the vertical axis, it was insightful to insipid, right?
Mm.
So they ranked various Twitter users on this quadrant, and I was in the upper right corner of this map. Right?
Which means insightful and what else?
And public, meaning mindcasting as against lifecasting. Talking about news and ideas as against what I had for lunch.
Right.
So,
and they respect that. The implicit in that was that they respect that more than the what did you have for lunch.
No, not really, because they had at the top left of the chart was, for some people, cooler. It's like people who write about their lives, and they're really, really insightful, you know?
Okay, yeah.
So anyway, I'm in a good position on this chart. If you look at it, you'll see.
No, I did it. In fact, I saw it before you pointed to it.
Yeah,
I didn't see it. I got to say, at that moment, I was happy and I was proud. I was proud that you were getting that kind of recognition. Of course, a little bit of jealousy kicked in, too. Right? You know,
all right, well.
We're going to be honest here, right? I mean, you know, of course, but I said, you know what, these are all people who live in New York. It was New York Magazine, right? I mean,
New York-centric, sure.
Yeah, so that makes perfect sense. I live on the West Coast, and aside from that, you know, you back off and you say, look, Jay is a good guy. He's doing good stuff with this, and it's great that they. I thought the upper right was good. I thought it was good that you were exactly.
Oh, sure, that's where I wanted to be. Of course,
that's where you want to be, right?
Definitely, yeah. So it was good, and I'm liking that. And I noticed that there was an uptick in the people who were joining my feed, and so I was watching it, and I didn't notice at first that there was like a serious uptick because I thought it was this New York Magazine thing.
Mm-hmm.
And then I like about 9 or 10 at night on what was it Thursday night? Can't remember what day it was now. I noticed that it was climbing in some weird way, and I started to think, well, somebody linked to me or Mashable or something like that. Or some sort of guide came out, you know. And then I said, oh, no, maybe this is something different. So then I looked at the suggested user list, and then I figured it out. And
how did you figure it out? I mean, what was your process? How did you actually figure it out?
Well, the rate of growth was
so it's the only thing that you're responsible for it.
Pardon me?
It was the only, you concluded by just, there was nothing else that.
Yeah,
that
it was like
a drudge
link or something.
similar
to what happens if you're linked by Drudge.
Oh, okay, Drudge, yeah. I thought you said drugs, and I was thinking, drugs? Where did drugs come in?
No.
But
so anyway, so then I looked, and then I looked at the suggested users list, which I actually don't look at very much.
I never look at it.
I don't care about it that much. And so then I saw myself, so then I knew what it was. So then I figured, well, this is pretty weird because I'm gaining 1,000 people an hour or something.
what was your base number? I mean, you were at like 12,000 followers at that point, right? I mean, so
no, I don't remember what it was. It was more than that, though, but I don't remember exactly where it was.
Well, we have the graph.
So anyway, it's fast. and I'm thinking, well, this is, you know, this is pretty weird, but it's late at night, and I'm tired, and I don't know, like, what I think about this. So, and I certainly remembered our conversation. So I decided to think about it.
Mm-hmm.
And see, this gets to part of how I see my role as a mm-hmm. journalism professor participating in things like Twitter. And my method in social media, my method from blogging on, has been to try and understand these things by participating in them selectively. And to do that, you have to become part of the system. You have to become part of the blogosphere in the case of blogging, right? And you learn about it by putting your own ideas at risk, by building up your own site, by mixing in with the others who are trying to advance this craft, right? That's how I learn. That's how I study things. And so putting yourself in situations where you have to make decisions about how you want to blog, what kind of blogger you want to be, and what is your thing as a writer, what is your code as a man, as a person in the online world, as a professor, all these things to force choices upon you and make you make decisions is exactly the point of doing it this way. It's exactly the point of studying by participating, which is my method as a professor. So trying to get linked in my blog at PressThink, trying to push things I have written about and said into Google so that they are part of the web, right? Gaining reputation online so that if I say it, it counts on the web, and both the live web and in web memory represented by Google.
Mm-hmm.
If you look up he said, she said journalism, PressThink is the first thing you hit because that's how I blog, right? So
now, is that more than an experiment? Is that more than experimental data to you? Is that a source of pride for you?
Sure,
that,
of course, yeah.
Okay,
of course.
So, I mean, it's not like you're withdrawn from this and just an observer. You put your whole being into this, and it's not just an exercise. It's you're actually doing it, right?
Absolutely, because I'm participating as a writer.
Right. Now, by the way,
my primary identity is a writer.
I find there aren't many people who do it that way. That's how I develop software. I could not develop software without being a user of it, and I don't understand how anybody could, but yet most people do.
Well, when it comes to blogging, I try to understand it by using it, and
when it comes
to Twitter, I'm doing the same thing. So
exactly. Yeah.
When something like this happens, where the Twitter system itself is like doing something to me,
mm-hmm.
my first instinct is to not react immediately because I want to study it. I want to think it through. This
mm-hmm.
is why I'm doing this.
Mm-hmm.
And in thinking it through, a couple of things were primary to me. The first one was when I was in graduate school, I delved deeply into the works of German philosopher and social critic Jürgen Habermas, who wrote the greatest book ever on the rise of the public sphere. And one of the concepts that Habermas develops, I don't recall the word in German, but it translates awkwardly into English as systematically distorted communication,
mm-hmm.
which in German is one word, but we have to take three to get the idea across.
We
all know what systematically distorted communication is. A perfect example would be an AstroTurf campaign in American politics, which is like fake grassroots organized
mm-hmm. yes.
by the DNC or RNC, right? So that's systematically distorted communication. Propaganda is systematically distorted communication. And the first thing that occurred to me when I looked at how the suggested users list of Twitter was working was that it was systematically distorted communication.
Mm-hmm.
And you could see it in the graph that you posted, you know, of like, and this was the second thing is I enjoyed and I was studying and I was like really working with the very gradual curve of adoption that my own Twitter feed had, right? And it was a certain pace that varied, but it was a result of what I was doing. And this growth was a result of something Twitter was doing to me.
Interesting.
Systematically distorted communication. And so I, for purposes of what I was trying to do with Twitter, which was to build a user base for what I call mindcasting and kind of play around with it and see how this tool works and just go in different directions that maybe others aren't pursuing in such an intense way, because I can do that as a professor. That's my goal. That's my job, right? So in developing this approach that I give the name mindcasting to so that people will look at it and say, hey, what's that? I liked the curve I was on, and this disrupted it. Another factor was that, and this I think is important for people in social media to understand, is the kinds of followers that I would get from this measure, being on the suggested users list, are different than the kind that I would win through my own method of doing Twitter. And in particular, people who come through the suggested users portal, as it were, are in a different situation toward me, in a different relationship to me, than people who get there through a recommendation, like Follow Friday, or just by watching other people who talk about something I said. So there's way more value in the person who arrives along a human route than there is in somebody who gets there through systematically distorted communication. So I liked the rise I was on. I didn't trust systematically disordered communication. And there's a certain amount of noise and bloat in the list of people who are adding your feed because they're not necessarily choosing it for the same reason. So for all those reasons, when I thought it through, and because I have always succeeded as a blogger by doing something that's maybe more demanding for a smaller group of people rather than easy and fun to enjoy for a large group. I went into blogging to develop long-form blogging, which was the opposite of what a lot of people said was successful in blogging, which was linking comment and aggregation. So I'm used to doing things my own way, and this was interfering with me doing things my own way and Habermas's warning rang in my ears. So when I thought it through that way, I said, well, I don't want this to continue because the graph was getting really crazy. And so I contacted Twitter, and that was that.
How did you contact them?
I don't know anybody at Twitter, so it was like a friend of a friend. Can you tell me who the right person to write to is? And sort of took care of it as a company.
Got it. Well, that was good that they did that. I find listening to you, first of all, I think you did absolutely the right thing in the right order. I thought about it afterwards. You know, maybe it would have been interesting to be able to study what happens in, you know, when thousands of people show up
randomly. I could
randomly.
Have done that, sure. Yeah, I thought
of
that.
I mean, and in a way, you kind of like to be able to do both, right?
Well, some people who do read what I write on Twitter said I should have done that for that reason.
Right, and they discussed this earlier. They discussed it yesterday on the Gilmore Gang, and they couldn't believe that you did what you had done.
Really? I didn't hear that.
Yeah. I mean, they just couldn't believe it. And I lost my connection just to the point where Mike Arrington was starting to talk about me, and he blamed me for your pulling out. And Mike has this fantastic way of looking at the world. Everybody is arm-twisting everybody else, and it's all by fear. Everybody relates to each other by fear. And, there's a lot of that in the technology industry. You know, I put myself in your shoes during this whole period. And, you know, for a while I thought, well, you know, I even wrote this in a tweet, you know, Jay was in a different plane than the rest of us. Because, honestly, Jay, I did not think you would do what you did. And I was blown away by your doing it. Because my experience is people just grab. They get an opportunity, something like that comes along, and it's hard for most people, if not almost everybody, to say no. But I know for a fact that I would say no. And I got a chance to put that to a test in watching you go through this, because I actually made a public statement that I will never be able to get away from if they ever put me on the suggested user list, which seems infinitely unlikely that they ever would. But that I have said I will ask to be taken off of it, and if they don't do it, I'll delete the account. Because that is the fundamental. You still have the power to do that. I mean, I wasn't sure that they would even hear your request to be taken off the list.
It was not a problem enough. There was no friction.
I get it, and I'm pleased to hear that. See, now, my interest, I'm not a journalism professor. You know, I call myself a media hacker, and I have a rather grandiose vision of myself, you know,
get with you on that proposition.
I was going to say, having that vision actually has worked out pretty well for me.
Yeah, right.
Because it's, you know, if you don't try, you can't accomplish anything. It was sort of, this is the kind of stuff that was drilled into me as a child, you know, that you really should set big goals for yourself. Why not? Because, you know, you only get to live once, whatever, you know. And so when I look at this suggested user list thing, I think of it from the point of view of the entire medium. And what it is doing to that medium, and you were looking at it from the standpoint of, which is perfectly valid, of course, from the standpoint of your own experience using Twitter, and, of course, I look at it from that point of view as well. But, you know, to me, I wrote about this today in preparation for this, and the way I put it was I didn't like the idea of Twitter coming between the relationship between its users.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, if you look at what Twitter is, they talk about the social graph, they talk about connections between people. You know, this is Apple called it the triumph of humanity the other day.
Yeah, and that was pretty over the top.
Over the top would be the word I would use. You know, I mean, does it cure cancer, you know, whatever. I mean, what else does it do? But okay, let's accept that, because I understand what they were saying. They weren't saying it was the triumph of technology, although we all know that they had some technology problems, right? But they're saying it's human to human. That's what's going on here. Well, they're just getting in the middle all the time of these relationships. They're completely screwing it up.
And
what I said when they first did it was, I know I'm repeating myself, but you'll never put two things back in the tube, Jay. And that was why you had to make a quick decision.
I did. I had to make a quick decision.
And that's the same reason why, let me just get this out of there, okay?
Yeah.
The same reason why on the macro level, because they didn't withdraw it right away, it almost doesn't matter. Because now this whole idea of what does a follower mean, it is completely up in the air. You have to ask, who are you talking about, and how are they related to people who are on the suggested user list? You know, we looked at what, in the middle of this whole thing, I set up an account, a brand new account, just to see what it looked like for a new user. In other words, I subscribed to 20 people,
right.
And oh my God, my chin dropped. Some of these people are really abusing the privilege. You know, these people that get these 300,000, 400,000 followers, they're throwing out ads in there, huge amounts of advertising, and they're drowning out. Most of the people on the suggested user list have about 300 updates total over their whole career on Twitter. So guess what? The people who have thousands completely dominate. And, you know, it's not a really nice thing that's going on there. It's kind of ugly.
All right. I made my decision for my own reasons that had to do with what I'm trying to do on Twitter. And I think if people have a different purpose for being on Twitter, they might make a different decision. I see it as a more of a practical thing for me and just keeping in the spirit of how I've approached blogging, because Twitter is just an extension of blogging.
Yeah, no, you said that very well. I think it's very clear that that was what your thinking was.
Yeah, okay, good.
And I think you did absolutely an incredible thing there, Jay. I mean, like I said, I absolutely was blown away when I saw what you did, because I just, you know, I wasn't sure how much I should say, because I wasn't sure what your process was. I wasn't sure what role I had played in it, you know, and, you know, whether you were angry with me for having expressed what I did express about it, you know.
It's going to be hilarious to see how people interpret this, because I just told you what happened. So.
I know. And
let's go on.
Well, to anybody that's listening, this is how adults relate, you know, and it's not like everything in the valley is. I mean, everybody's like this Three Stooges thing going on. And everybody's angry with everybody else because they didn't kiss up to them in the right way. Well, you know, if I didn't like what happened, so that's just me saying I didn't like it, right? What the hell does that mean?
Well, I'm as big as you are, Dave.
Exactly. And that's why I like you, Dave. There you go. You have these grandiose visions. That's why I like you. That's why we're
all right. Now let's talk about do you want to comment at all on Oprah on Twitter? I am not impressed with Oprah on Twitter, but I am also not. I'm not really like upset about it either.
No,
Okay, but you had some observations about celebrity and Twitter that you wanted to go on to, or should we go on? Should we do next?
Sure, I do a little bit, maybe just a little bit. I mean, celebrityhood. This is a flip side of the same coin that we're talking about here, right? Is because, you know, what happens is people talk about this and they go, well, you know, it's no big deal. I just don't follow them. I don't need to pay attention to what they're doing, you know, and that's simply not true. I mean, people don't understand what the role of a celebrity is.
Right, they're going to get you anyway.
Right, well, that's why they are celebrities, is because they're so good at doing that. And, you know, like the first taste I had of this when it really came home to me that there was no escaping it, was when Ellen DeGeneres decided she needed to have 500,000 followers. And so she told everybody that was following her, was already a few hundred thousand people, to spread the word, you know, Ellen wants more followers. So dutifully, that's what they did. Uh-huh. And I was like, I'm getting all these direct messages, all these, you know, @ you know, messages, and I'm seeing it in people's Twitch streams, and everybody says, well, just unfollow, block them, whatever, do all the shit you have to do to get rid of them, but of course it's all after the fact. And the messages still get through. And I'm still being inundated with Ellen DeGeneres, who I actually had a pretty high opinion of until I saw all this stuff. And now I'm thinking, God, you know, Ellen DeGeneres is just another one of these people, you know? And it's.
I'm like one of your people who doesn't understand, because I just don't care what she's doing. And I say it doesn't affect me.
But
so.
It will affect you, and you won't be able to miss it. I know. Well, you know. I care because in here is a nugget. Inside of Twitter is something wonderful that is a puzzle. I'm trying to figure it out, okay? And all this crap is interfering with the figuring it out.
Well, I would give you my interpretation of it, because I do have a sense, I have one way of looking at that where I totally agree with you. Mass media was communication to an atomized, with a Z, audience, right? Where people were connected up, but they were not connected across.
Mm-hmm.
And I think of Twitter as a tool that's giving expression to that fact, that is filling in the media by connecting across as more effectively than it does up.
Absolutely.
So, okay,
isn't that wonderful that it's doing that too?
Yeah, it is. So it's doing that, right? And
by the way, that's why they didn't offer you a chance to testify at Congress. Because you're going to go and open your mouth and say shit like that. And
well,
I
don't know. Well, the more I learned about it, the more I realized it's just like everything else.
But Howard Weaver had a great video. He was interviewed, and I finally found out what Howard Weaver looks like. He's a nice-looking man, you know?
Oh, he is. He's an impressive guy, absolutely.
And he is an impressive guy, but he still uses the word audience. And, you know, and I wanted to go, Howard, you know, you could save yourself a few years by just, he says, what we have to do is reconnect with our audience, right?
Well, no. But that's traveling. They're making, that's on the way there. So.
It is, but it's too late to be on the way there. They need to be a little bit further along on the way there. Because
all
that
right.
was the epiphany available to them 10 years ago. And now they have to live in a world where that's reality, where the audience isn't, no longer even sees itself as an audience.
And this feeds directly into my source of inspiration.
Go for it.
Josh Marshall, who is the creator of Talking Points Metal, in my mind, the most successful political blog out there as a journalistic vehicle, is a source of inspiration to me for this very reason. He figured out a different way of looking at the audience. He actually figured out how you see the people on the receiving end as primary sources of information. And he worked out a workflow as well as a new kind of news organization that was built on a different relationship with the people formerly known as the audience. And he's the one who has come the closest to actually demolishing the view of the people out there as an audience connected up as receivers, but not across, and also not as producers, only as consumers. So he reversed it. How did he reverse it? Well, the cool thing about Josh is not that he won a George K. Polk Award, which is cousin to the Pulitzer's. It's not that every political journalist in Washington reads him and respects him as a journalist. It's not that even the Columbia University School of Journalism by now thinks Marshall is God and writes profiles on him in the Columbia Journalism Review and invites him to campus. It's not any of that. It's that he, just as a journalist open to the web, came upon the utility of the former audience by experimenting and having no choice. He was only a guy with a website. He had no capital. He had no organization. He was like a punk rocker, right? He had to invent out of nothing. And so the way he came upon it was because he was a good blogger and he was good at arguing as well as investigating a story, he developed a following, and he realized through his inbox that the people following him knew a lot. And he learned that if he paid attention to his email traffic really closely and wrote people back, that it paid off. And if he asked his users, does anyone know anything, he got amazing information sometimes. And sometimes completely unasked, people who were clearly very knowledgeable in their fields, like maybe they worked as district attorneys, maybe they were engineers for the town, maybe they were bankers, but they read his blog, right? Would start sending him stuff either on something he was working on or something that he should be working on. And just by adapting to that, he started to build a new kind of news organization. And here's how we can capture it, Dave. In the old style news organization, the Cleveland Plain Dealer, the news day begins when the editors of the various sections get together in their conference room and say, okay, what's the news today? And that whole system depends on not only a one-to-many media structure, but a kind of professional authority that monopolies assume. Marshall's day begins with the inbox, with filtering the inbox of what's come in from readers, from users, on comments threads, much of it behind the scenes, and sometimes in public forums like TPM Cafe or what people are posting at the user part of it. So he has the people who work for him start their day by looking at what's coming in from users. And then what he does is designate at his site a few stories that we're going to be following, which are basically narrative lines that continue from day to day and week to week. And these become the things that the users, the inflow, can focus on. Then, using the web and being totally untrapped by the conventions of journalism, he advances a story by doing any one of five things that achieve the same end. Intelligent aggregation of what others are saying about this story, the U.S. attorney scandal. Original reporting that his people, that he employs, develop at his muckraking site. Josh Marshall's own commentary on the news delivered as an expert blogger on the front page of his site. Or reader blogs on the same topic that he's promoting from the front page. Or letters from readers, from really knowledgeable readers, that he's decided to feature. And just by combining all these various things, he pushes the story forward and creates a kind of narrative arc that you can join, right? And inflow from readers, narrative arc, use the entire web and teach the people who work for you these methods. Over a couple of years, you have a new kind of news organization. And that is why Josh Marshall is my hero.
That's a great story. That encapsulates what is blogging, basically. I mean, and it's got every element in it. But the most important thing is that you're tapping in, you're asking questions of the people that you used to think of as audiences, and they love it. I mean, that's been my experience in scripting news, is that, you know, there's a certain type of problem that I can bring to these people, and they will just charge into it, you know, with incredible enthusiasm and passion. They want to be participating, and they love to show off what they know, and they love problem solving, and it's a whole different arena. I mean, my guys, like, you know, they like web servers and programming languages and gadgetry and all that kind of stuff. So it works all over the map. And Marshall is a wonderful guy. And I couldn't think of a better example of somebody as a source of inspiration. He is absolutely a source of inspiration.
And the cool thing about him is that he has no agenda to be a web pioneer. He has
really loves what he's doing, right?
He just wants to be a good journalist. And he's actually a classic old style political reporter.
Yeah.
Who adapted to the web. And this the reason I admire him so much and I follow his site so closely is that he shows us that being open is
right.
Doable.
Because these things are out there. When he sets the agenda, he's not doing this on a private website that's only available to the editors. It's all out in the open where everybody can see it, right?
Well, no. Actually, what he's really effective at is he combines totally open methods like that, where anyone can see it, with semi-open methods where you've kind of got some gates there, with open appeals to send back-channel communication, with ever more private methods. And what's great about him is that he's not committed to any one thing. He's very proud of what he does. So
is the private channel necessary to protect people so that they don't
And to develop stories that just wouldn't stand for the light of day. And he combines the inflow, which is the key to his news organization, inflow, daily inflow from the users, with very traditional reporting. You know, digging up information, doing what journalists have always done. So anyway, that is why his site is important. And the journalism inbox, which is part of his method, is something I think we should see. see as part of the new system.
But you're fading away there, Jay. What happened?
I said the journalism of the inbox, which is what I see him as practicing, is something we should recognize as part of the rebooted system of news.
Absolutely. And I think that the mainstream media is part of that as well. I mean, I said there was one of the most, you know, now that we have this the 40 tweets application, I, of course, can see what people like, you know, which is, and sometimes there are real surprises about what things rise all the way to the top.
Mm-hmm.
And in the last few hours, a story that I pushed from the LA Times, they did a study of why is it that there's 160 characters.
Oh, it was a killer. I saw it. I read it.
I know, and it's just totally soared through this community, and everybody's like completely loving it. And, and so having that kind of, so there's the LA Times, right? You know, we doing something that obviously struck a chord. Now, they just need to do more of that. It's really that simple. Engage with, find out what makes these people, what they're interested in, and what you're interested in, and then just do that. It's like, it's really, remarkably simple.
I think they get that.
Yeah, I think that some of them do. I think that there are people at the LA Times that are on top of it. I was thinking about, you know, well, actually, I had a question. We did move off of the suggested user list a little bit quickly, actually, because there was a question, and we kind of need to do this quickly because we know we're running out of time. But what would you say about a journalist being on the suggested user list? Take, like, Anna Marie Cox, for example, who works for Air America. You know, she, and I think she's great, and I email with her about this stuff, and I've asked her a bunch of questions. I have not shared any of her answers because she's asked me not to. And I haven't called her out publicly, and I haven't said she's doing anything wrong. And because I don't think, I haven't decided. But what do you think? I mean, should
a
reporter...
I think it's totally a judgment call. I don't want to get into the business of suggesting what other people should do. I don't have a suggestion.
What about the New York Times? What if the New York Times called you up and said, How do you feel about us being on the suggested user list? What would you say to them?
I'd say that's up to y'all.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay. So you don't think that, let me ask you it a different way. Okay, so now I'm playing Ted Koppel, sorry. But don't you think that a reporter would hesitate to be critical of a vendor that was giving them so much?
I think reporters are pretty good about that, although I think there certainly is potential.
All right, let me try it a different way.
I wouldn't give advice for this reason because I don't think that these are easy calls. I think that
all right, I'm going to ask for advice then, okay? As a reader of the New York Times, do you think that I should think that they are influenced by the fact that they are on the suggested user list?
As a reader of the New York Times, I do not worry about that, no.
Okay.
No.
Give me a lot of shit for even raising the question.
Yeah.
That bothers me a lot, by the way. The fact that they apparently feel that I should not even be asking questions.
Well,
like, you know, that's the New York Times.
I don't think our listeners are interested in that, although they will. It is true that they...
They ought to watch very carefully what they say about people asking questions about them, because this is the same publication that gave the Bush administration a pass on the war in Iraq and had Judy Miller and Jason Blair and all the rest of this stuff. They really play footsie in a lot of areas, and they really ought to be welcoming more of this kind of stuff, because it would... In the big picture, it might actually save us from a calamity someday if they were just more willing to accept criticism. Bothers me, I'll tell you that.
All right.
Yeah.
This has been a good podcast, Dave.
Is it a podcast? I think so. I have one question for you. We're not done yet, okay? One more question. How do you feel about call-ins? How do you feel about, like, having a segment of, let's say, 15 minutes in the show where we take calls?
You mean like anybody calls, or we take calls from somebody who's calling in that we said call in?
Either way.
I'm open to it. I'm more interested in the second. I'm more interested in somebody joining us that we pick.
Okay.
But we could try it, sure.
Okay. Think about it, and we'll discuss it, right?
I did think of somebody in that role.
Well, I don't think you should invite them right now on the podcast.
Right, I don't think
that's probably a little bit embarrassing. I don't honestly have any idea who you're talking about, so let's
Well, Jay, let's think about it, and thanks for another good podcast.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Jay. Have a great one. Bye.